Welcome, one and all, to Pop a la Carte, episode 134, the return of Asian Drama Corner. Even though it is not an Asian drama, we are starting with Suicide Squad. I guess it's tangential, because once upon a time, John Cena said Taiwan was a country, and then he had to apologize for saying Taiwan was a country, so now Suicide Squad is an Asian drama. I am Tatiana, and I am here with...
I'm Angela.
I'm Camille.
Wonderful. So now that we've all seen Suicide Squad, the superior version, I assume that we all agree on this. Please begin your thesis on why it is a superior version.
The Suicide Squad was just a lot more fun.
I'm not super into superhero movies that take themselves too seriously. Like, for the sake of taking itself too seriously, like, if you can make it make sense with, like, who the character is and whatever, then fine. But I just think that I'm over Grimdark, too, so.
That's true. I thought it struck a nice balance between, like, it was very super gory, for sure, but it also felt like it was having a good time, and not, like, in a very confused way. Like, the first Suicide Squad was, like, half of it was, like, super ultra-serious crime fest, and the other half was just, like, fart jokes. So,
I had this philosophical debate with my brother over, like, the gore, because he didn't, he thought it was too much for him, too. And I was like, I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, but are we so desensitized to violence? Like, if we're going to have it, do we need to see this? Because we have to force ourselves to confront the reality of what we're enjoying.
Oh, you know?
He's like, I would only hear, he's like, I don't agree if the movie doesn't take itself seriously. And I was like, so you can have a goofy movie with goofy violence, but then that's saying violence is goofy. I have I'm not going to pitch a tent on any hill to die on. I don't care. I was just like...
If I was going to die on a hill, I would say that I do think that the point of the Suicide Squad, in to some degree, right, just the concept of it, is how far Amanda Waller is willing to go and how she does dehumanize the people under her, what should be quote-unquote care, even though they're in jail, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I do think that is the point of the story anyway.
So especially the gore with half of them dying is very appropriate for that.
But yeah, overall, like, I wasn't like, I don't feel like it's like a revolutionary movie, you know? But I did enjoy it. I definitely think it's like steering the ship in the right direction for that kind of concept.
At least it's because it seemed to be what James Gunn chose. Like, it sounds like DC was like, what do you want to do? But possibly like had a dossier of, it probably wasn't any all DC anything, just maybe of what we are willing to work with. Because I am a little curious why DC keeps coming back to this well, like, just do a new one. Like, why do you do Suicide Squad?
That's true. They have so many options, and yet I guess they're just really trying to make the tried and true ones work, because otherwise they don't trust themselves with the new properties. I don't know.
But it wasn't tried and true. People didn't like Suicide Squad.
No, it's
Everyone hated it. I think it's probably whatever remaining goodwill they had towards Harley, because I really like Birds of Prey, and Birds of Prey is pretty good. So they're like, yeah, maybe people would be still willing to see Harley again on screen. I mean, I don't think anyone was there to see a revamped version of, or the soft reboot, whatever they call it, of Rick Flag. Sorry, Joel Kinnaman. So, and I mean, I love Viola Davis, but, you know, she didn't really do anything new as Waller this time around. She pretty much played the same beats, although she had, there were some really funny moments as well. But yeah, it was kind of weird when they first announced that they were going to redo the Suicide Squad, but I'm really glad they did, because it was a fun movie, and it's probably one of my favorite movies in DCU. Not that, you know, there's such a such a high bar to aspire to at this point, but like, that's what we have, and Birds of Prey is up there, and the Suicide Squad is up there. I think I definitely had more fun with it than Aquaman. I liked Aquaman. Wonder Woman is still kind of up there, but yeah, I don't know. And maybe they were trying to go for, this is the closest thing they're going to get to a sort of like Avengers right. style that's actually fun. I mean, come on, Justice League and the Snyder Cut mm-hmm. are not going to ever rank up there, to be honest. But
it was better than Wonder Woman 84.
Also not saying much.
I know, which I only just saw because HBO Max wouldn't let me watch it. It's only just out in theaters here in Germany now because theaters were closed when it came out. And then HBO Max wouldn't let me see it before it sensed my VPN and was like, get the hints. But so I only just watched Wonder Woman 84 like a month ago.
It's okay.
It was worth it. I was like, I'm glad I waited until this was easy for me. But yeah, I liked when Harley killed that guy. That was fun. And that was fun character development carrying in for her from Birds of Prey.
I think that's one of the reasons too, like that they didn't want to give up on it. It was because people do love Harley Quinn, even if they don't love the whole Suicide Squad concept at first.
They just let her make a Harley Quinn movie. Like
That's true. Yeah. But they want to use her
Birds of Prey.
Yeah. Like, they want like with Birds of Prey, they use her to kind of like up the brand rep of something
else. Yeah. You're gonna bring her in to save your other movies. Exactly. Just let the movie be about her. Like, I'm never not gonna be a little bitter that they let Harley take over Birds of Prey.
Yeah,
when it should just think Gotham City Sirens or something. It doesn't make sense. Agreed. But like, and so there. But with here, with Suicide Squad, the whole thing situation is just weird and a mess. And but you can even see the way her character was, because then everybody else except for Rick Flagg that she knew on that team was dead. So she was kind of like. A contrasting narrative for a while, like
and
they give her own little subplot just to probably give her something to do before just joining a team again. I mean, what I do appreciate about the teamwork this time around, because was it felt more earned, because it you really see that they spent a bit more time with each other than with the first Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So
definitely.
Honestly, I hadn't seen the original one before this one, and I said, you know what, this is probably time to just see it just so I can compare. And I'm like, yeah, this was crap. This is like 2 hours. I'm not getting back. And then I saw this one and I said, oh, this is fun. And I said, at least it really just highlights how bad the first one was. And yeah, a lot of it is because it's a comic book movie. You can be as ridiculous as you want to be with it. But if you have like characters that you can root for and like a good teamwork dynamic, it's worth the ride. Like, this one was worth the ride because, like, some of these characters you have never heard of before. Like, Polka Dot Man, come on, Ratcatcher 2. But they did it in such a way that by the end of the movie, you actually care. Well, I actually cared about them.
For sure.
I cared so much about Nanawe, and he had no friends, and Nom Nom, and all that.
Yeah.
I just loved him so much. I love Ratcatcher too. Like, she was the heart of the film. Mm-hmm. Idris Elba as Bloodsport was just having so much fun. And I feel like it's a good thing that they didn't make, like, recast Deadshot, because, you know, Will Smith was doing his best there in the first movie. And he was one of the people, like, still kind of worth watching.
Yeah.
But they just didn't have much to work with. Even Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg was way more fun in this movie. And
yes, I was going to say, by the end of it, I did care about Rick Flagg.
I felt pretty sad that he died.
Exactly. Like, wow. I was not happy about that. I was like, come on now. Also, like, why would
you
Peacemaker
make me like
get a
him
spin-off?
Now?
Yeah. I was like, after that, Peacemaker gets a spinoff? I will kill you.
Yeah. But also, John Cena's pretty funny. And like, fine. At least at this time around, basically, you didn't waste a good cast, because they really had a good cast for the first one, and it was just a waste. And I said, I'm pretty glad that Viola Davis decided to just come back, and it was, the whole thing was redeemed in a way, and Margot Robbie didn't waste her time as well in this one. So it was a team dynamic, because in the first one you get the sense that it took so long to just like assemble them, and then they were together for like what, like 24 hours or one night before the whole thing gets resolved. So I said, you're not going to believe that they have any sort of bond in such a short time. But in this one, they spend at least a few nights or a few days with each other.
Right.
So that's at least, that's a longer time, and that's enough to build some sort of dynamic. And by the end, But I really, the whole Milton thing is just so hilarious to me because it's so stupid, but it's so funny because you don't see it coming and they're like, they argue about Milton. And my favorite, one of my favorite moments is still that, you know, heartwarming exchange between Bloodsport and Harley where she's mm-hmm. like, I can be your friend, Milton. Oh, wait, with the moment, Harley.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has stupid moments like that, but, and yet they're really stupid and hilarious, but they stick in your mind. And like, yeah. I don't even remember at this point in some of the other, like the last dozen or so movies that I've seen, but I remember those moments from The Suicide Squad. And I said, that's a feat in itself that it makes me care that much about like a giant shark and a girl who can control rats, which is super gross, by the way. And the final battle being against a giant starfish. I mean, mm-hmm. and yet it was fun, and they just gave in to it. Mm-hmm. The gore was, I do like want to support your point, Angela, on how maybe we have been desensitized to all this gore. That that's problematic, but I was just surprised that they went that far. And what I think was a bit refreshing about this being R-rated was the R rating, I guess, was just more for the gore and the violence and no weird sex stuff. Right? I was like, wow.
Yes, true.
No sex stuff. Thank you. Thank you for that. And also no male gaze. There's a lot of female gaze in this one, like not just mm-hmm. Harley's whole subplot, which is funny, but even like small moments at the beginning when Bloodsport and Peacemaker like going to meet Ratcatcher 2 for the first time. So they entered like the women's prison, and right. you see like, you know, well, it's Idris Elba and John Cena, so like all the women prisoners are like, hey. I said, this is female gaze, thank you so much, instead of as opposed to maybe like like the way they treated Harley in the first movie. Ugh, gross. So yeah. Definitely. Appreciate these little touches. So I said, you know, it is possible to have like a non-objectified female character. And I don't know why it has to take a movie about defeating a giant starfish for us to have some sort of gender equity. We are in that timeline, but okay.
Yeah. Although the giant starfish was also pretty great. I felt like they did a pretty good job with that too. Yeah.
Yeah, they really did.
And how is that like a more compelling monster movie than Godzilla versus Kong?
Right.
This is the kind of ridiculous fun that I wanted that movie to be. Because that movie, that whole franchise, that whole series just takes itself too seriously. Which is just like, why would you take yourself too seriously? You are about kaijus mm-hmm. and a giant gorilla. Just have fun with it.
Right.
You need to do to take it, like, here's the thing, is that they take it too seriously, but it's like the wrong kind of serious.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we won't have anything funny. We won't like acknowledge that this is a little ridiculous. But really what the moments that made it the best, the Suicide Squad that we talked about, even with the starfish, is the moments that they give it some heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way to take what you're doing seriously, because they didn't need to do that. And if they didn't do that, it wouldn't even be as good as it is. So take it seriously by giving it a little bit of heart, and people will respond to that. Like with, mm-hmm. you know, where they went with Polka Dot Man and Ratcatcher 2, and even the starfish at the end being like, I was floating and I was happy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was a good moment.
That was.
Not a lot of people talk about that, but even the starfish had a moment.
Yeah. He gave the giant starfish a moment. Like, so good job, Suicide Squad.
Yeah, there's hope for the DCEU if
they're not gonna get to keep James Gunn, though. That's, I don't know that they get to keep James Gunn,
right? I mean, maybe not come back for a second Suicide Squad if
but he did say he wanted to take a break after like Guardians 3, right?
Right,
but I mean, given what he's done for the DCEU now, you know. They better just keep him on their good.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll try. Yeah, they'll do their best to get
Well,
him
he's
back.
Doing the Peacemaker show, so.
Yeah.
They might not be able to, and I guess I just don't trust DC to understand what makes a movie successful.
That's true. I mean, clearly they didn't, because after Wonder Woman was successful, they messed it all up for the second one.
Yep.
Ugh. Can't have. a good thing with DC, the DCU, after all. I don't know. I mean, I saw there was like some talks about the Ayer cut of the first Suicide movie, and I'm like, does anyone really want that?
No. Right.
Just because you gave Snyder a Snyder cut doesn't mean that every other director who wants to push his or her agenda should get like that. Right. We've had one. I mean, the fact that the Snyder cut exists is still like baffling to me. But okay, it exists. It's there. Let's not do this again.
That was probably Suicide Squad. That's probably all we need for that. So should we do Asian dramas?
Yes, Asian drama. Yes. We will allow the two of you to begin with Filipino stories. So Game Boys movie.
Yes, which again, they just said that they're going to have it air for another weekend, but it looks like it's only Filipino screenings. Like screens in the Philippines.
I think so, yeah.
International audience has got two chances. It was really, really, really good. But I kind of want them, I think, is there still a season two Game Boys happening, or did the movie take it over?
I'm not sure. I haven't really made any announcements. There's enough material to do a season two, for sure.
Well, I would rather the people who made the Game Boys 1 and Game Boys the movie to make the next season of Pearl, rather than they make more Game Boys. Right. That's what I mean. Because for me, the hardest thing, aside from just physically having to watch the screen when his aunt was being terrible, was just seeing...
Oh, man.
And it wouldn't have bothered me so much if they hadn't spoken so much before Pearl Next Door came out about, like, how, you know, they never wanted her to be a leading, like, look like she was anything but a leading character. But just, I don't know, seeing her again brought all that back up for me, where I was just like, you did such a bad job with her. It was, like, really insulting.
I never saw Pearl Next Door, also because you told me not to. So.
No,
I decided to not do that anymore.
It was different people, it was different writer, different director, production company, but like, and they just didn't. They didn't understand. It's like they did enough research to learn that biphobia exists, but then like wrote a really biphobic story, thinking that they weren't writing a biphobic. They made it more about the biphobic character she's in love with. It felt like it was her story. Not Pearl's. And Pearl wasn't in character because she was taking all this crap. Anyway, so I was kind of mad about Terrence and the other dude getting to be the secondary. Them getting to be the subplot in this movie. It was because they were like, Pearl is never just a supporting character. But I was like, I don't know. So I want this team to do her story. That's what I want.
That's true.
But it was so good. Like, it addressed how in this... They just... are so good at making you love a character so quickly. Like, because his aunt that he goes to live with.
Yeah.
She's in what, like one scene and I adored her. And that's something that, so not the evil aunt. The evil aunt is terrible and she should just like fall off a cliff. And it's like every abusive person in the world who is just like, how dare you stand up for yourself to me if it is inconvenient to me. You know, like I should be allowed to say whatever I want to say to you, but you can't ever give me pushback on that. Like, it was really difficult to watch. But I'm.
Go ahead. After I have some strong opinions about Evil Aunt as well.
I'm glad though that they never for a second, because even sometimes in like K-dramas and stuff, when they get treated terribly by relatives, and it's different because it's not about homophobia. But they do always try to make it, like, have the characters sort of try to understand where their parents are coming from or whatever. But this, it was never supposed to be anything but really terrible. And so that was good. But, yeah, that's what I got about Evil Aunt.
Well, what is painful about watching all the interactions with her and all her scenes was how familiar it was to me. Because she's not even an exaggeration, honestly. I literally have aunts and other relatives who would speak or act the same way. This is basically like practically everyone, every Filipino is like experienced with family. So that was uncomfortable, but also very, probably because it's just too close for comfort.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not even the homophobia. It's just there's misogyny always in our families, racism, everything. Everything you think about, that's offensive. And it's always somebody's auntie. And you always have, I mean, the way we're all brought up is exactly to act like Gav has or had until he reached the breaking point. And just, you know, keep quiet, stay polite. And, you know, it perpetuates this whole, I call it like some sort of senior entitlement. That, like the older people think that they have like free reign to say and do whatever they want because they're old and you're young and you're supposed to respect them. But like at some point, maybe in the younger generations, we're beginning to just talk back, fight back, and say that, you know what, just because you're old doesn't give you the right to be an asshole. Come on.
I saw a K-drama recently, and I forget, unfortunately, which K-drama it was, but it had a line in there about that, where there's like an old woman behaving badly, and like a middle-aged kind of dude calls her out, and he's like, "You're abusing your elder privilege. It doesn't mean you can just behave however you want." And I was like, yay, somebody's saying it.
Yeah.
Cute.
I mean, it's cathartic for them to finally stand up to her at some point, but they need that to happen in the movie. But in reality, sadly, a lot of people will probably not have the guts to do it. It's just too difficult. And I mean, one of the great things about this movie is we finally got to see more about Gab, because, you know, I think the series has just really showed us so much of Kai's perspective.
It was really his point of view in the season show.
So it was great. But yeah, I do agree that I don't know why like Wesley and Terrence had to be there.
It was weird. They're just gonna, why do they both just show up at Gab's house? I don't know, because one was following the other one. What are they doing there? Like, it's a pandemic. Like, what?
It's unrealistic that they would be even be allowed to be in the same house. And also, sorry, what a nice house.
Oh, I know. Nice, they tried to buy this. His family is rich and they're like landlords or something, but yeah.
Clearly, and they said, wow. And I mean, given that we are still in an extended quarantine, which has just been extended to the end of the month, because things are not getting much better, and they filmed this like ages ago before things got even worse. So it's kind of weird because I have to compare this with the Hello Stranger movie, where they just went straight for like science fiction and acted like the pandemic was over. With Game Boys, it's still situated in some sort of reality.
I know. They did a time jump to unspecified. Game Boys, I can't figure out. I honestly can't figure out the timeline. So it's like when he's staying.
Sometime in July.
Yeah, so when he's staying with Gav after the finale of the show, or his mom is. But his mom was like, you can have at most 2 weeks, is what I remember her saying in the show. So all of this takes place in that time period. And also they make a couple like trying to figure out the timeline for this. Pearl Next Door is happening at the same time. Pearl Next Door starts sometime during Game Boy season one. And then so I was like, I feel like somebody needs like a flowchart to like figure out the
probably.
It, but if you care, it doesn't really matter, you know?
I mean, it was good to see them together. It was very contrived to get Pearl and Achilles there. I still don't really get the issue between Achilles and Terrence, and also why that was such a big deal still. Because like, in one of those, I don't know, was it in one of those extra episodes where Achilles, I get the impression that Achilles was moving on, and apparently he isn't, so just like, is that thrown in the mix just for extra tension or something?
Yeah, to tell us, because he was like, you led me on, but it was like footage not found, which is fair. Maybe they're implying that that happened off screen.
Okay.
But like, I was like, how much can you lead somebody on when you're always only talking over Skype, unless you literally say, I like you, I'm going to date you? Like, unless those words came out of his mouth, I don't think there's like standard dating protocol for like video calls with somebody you weren't dating before the video call started. So, maybe. Like, yeah, I guess it's just unnecessary drama. And I was just like, you have limited time here. Let's focus on, like, they're trying to establish them. This is what makes me think they are still trying to plan a season two eventually, because, or at least they just want to leave those irons in the fire just in case. But I'm like, if you're going to do, which didn't annoy me at the end of Game Boy season one, because I was like, Pearl's getting her own show, so that's fine. As much as I don't really care about Terrence and Wesley, fine. But I was like, now if you're going to do such a crappy job at Pearl, like, ugh. Like, stop focusing on these dudes. I don't like it. But it was beautifully shot. Like, well, I mean, they literally did film Game Boys in quarantine with materials that they could just send to the actors' houses. So it really fit the aesthetic, but it was just fun to, like, them to see them get to show off what they can do, you know?
That's true. That's so, true. Really, and watching it while I'm at home in quarantine gives me mixed feelings. Because it's like a nice house. You can meet up with your friends. Even your annoying relatives can reach you. So, meanwhile, the rest of us are just isolated. So it's like, oh, that's something. But that's just the pandemic mood, basically. But it was really great to see them again. Like you said, I enjoyed it. It was really well done. And at least the conflict at the heart of it was really heavy. It wasn't contrived. Again, I remember the conflict at the heart of Hello, Stranger in a Movie, which was just like...
It was stupid.
Stupid. This one was real. And it has always been a conflict where Kai would be moving to Bukidnon anyway. So this was this extra thing thrown in there that, you know, they were really going to be separated. But if anything, they got together online. That was the whole premise of the show. So as long as they have a stable internet connection, they'll find ways to stay connected. I mean,
true love.
True love, yes, will prevail, whatever. So.
Yeah, it was usually, I think it's because K-dramas overdue the, like, study abroad, or just the person goes abroad. Yeah. I call it study abroad, but it's...
But in the post-pandemic world, it's not a big deal anymore, honestly.
Yeah, but in this, it worked. They established it well. Yeah, as even though they even had that conversation where Kai was like, I'm going there anyway, and Gav was like, but we had a plan for that, you know. And I thought the character development for both of them was really good. We get to see more of Gav's vulnerabilities, which he hid anything that was vulnerable with him for the most part, unless it was specifically when Kai hurt him. And Kai, to see Kai, like, really fight to stay with Gav, but also to, like, support him so much. Like, when Gav was, like, had his breakdown and, like, Kai wouldn't leave him alone. Like, he's like, I just want it, like, don't shut me out, basically. Mm-hmm. I thought was, and fought to not be shut out. Like, I thought that was really good development for the both of them. And they both knocked it out of the park. They were fantastic. Mm-hmm. So, it's really, really good. I want to recommend it to people, but, like, I mean, hopefully they're going to make it available for purchase or something eventually. It was...
I hope they do. I actually found the link that was just not... very legit, so yeah, I'm sure it's going to be piratable somewhere.
Well, it's difficult to. There were two screenings that would work for international audiences, like one on the 31st and one on the 7th, and like that's it. Like, so
there are illegal links going around.
Yes, of course. So
yeah.
But now nobody has that choice, so you can find it if you want it. So definite recommend, but
let's see how it goes. I hope they do it.
I'm sure they would. It would be money. Like, why would you not? Like, why would you not? People will give you their money. I will buy it, like, to perma buy it. So if they let me, so, and they know there's an international audience, clearly. So
yeah,
I'll just assume they're working at that. But I think that's Game Boys. Unfortunately, I was not able to watch an episode of that anime that you were talking about because my mother-in-law is here and he said it was really gory and stuff.
So. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's you gonna talk about? Are you gonna talk about the Netflix anime?
I could talk about it really quickly, just alone.
Because we're still in the Philippines.
Yeah, before
tell us about it.
Somewhere else. It is an Asian drama, even if it is an anime.
Camille, tell us about Trece.
Great, thanks, Tatiana. So Trece is an anime that was based, as all animes are, on a graphic novel in the Philippines. And I'm just pretty excited because it's the very first Filipino anime ever released internationally, and it's on Netflix.
That's
right
super
now.
Cool.
So we're very proud of it. It's just 6 episodes for the first season. Hopefully it gets renewed for the second season because there's a lot of material there. So I did not read the graphic novel, so I came in just really to appreciate the anime. But it's easy enough for me to get into it because it's based on Filipino mythology. And it's like a crime, a modern day, like modern crime horror show that like integrates Filipino mythology elements with like other modern jokes. Sorry, I think there's still an echo. Is there?
It just began again. It's like growing.
Yeah. It when I started, I know there wasn't. Is it gone now?
It's gone now. So
okay, sorry. So I guess I'll just keep going and just tell me to stop if it happens again. Right. Yeah. So Trece is about, well, the main protagonist or heroine, whose name is Alexandra Trece. That's her last name. And it's symbolic for spoilery reasons. So there. But her last name is Trece. It's spelled T-R-E-S-E because that's how we spell Trece, which is the same word.
But it is the number
13.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It is the number 13, and that's what we call the number 13 as well. That's how we spell it. So, yeah, and she's basically she's a chosen one. She is an investigator of supernatural crimes and an expert in defeating demons and other supernatural beings. And her father also plays a big role in like linking together the different supernatural beings with the human world and trying to keep the peace. But of course this kind of balance is hard to keep. And yeah, so it starts out as like a police procedural with supernatural elements. So the criminals, so to speak, are actually mythological beasts or monsters.
Ooh, that's fun.
So yeah. It has a certain like level of gore, maybe. I don't find the horror elements particularly disturbing, but I don't really get disturbed easily, so it might be too dark for some people. But yeah, so there are the concepts of death, our versions of I guess fairies and like centaurs and vampires, our own versions. So I think if you want to learn more about like Filipino mythology, it would be a good introduction, and it's fairly easy to follow because it's just a police procedural. And then Alexandra Trece is the detective or the investigator. And she also has powers of her own. And she's accompanied by these twins who are also like, who have their own supernatural powers. And yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but they're pretty funny because they add like some humor to the whole thing. They're called Crispin and Basilio. And their names are going to be super familiar to any Filipino who studied Filipino literature in high school, because they're the names of two characters who are also brothers in this novel that we were all forced to learn and to read in high school. So it's clearly just like one of those things where we find it super amusing. Oh, Crispin and Basilio, of course. But yeah. Yeah, there are lots of, it's an inside joke, but it's fun. So that's the concept of it. Supernatural entities and the human world trying to coexist, but of course creating a lot of tension and some crimes that may or may not be attributed to malevolent beings or a really malevolent war god being reincarnated who might cause more problems than they expect. And it's cool. It's a nice mix of that kind of genre, and I think they did it pretty well. It's only 6 episodes, and I think all 6 are are engaging enough, like half an hour contained stories, plus almost each episode or each case features a different mythological creature. So it's like, it's a really interesting way of presenting our culture as well. There's a whole thing about the dub, the different versions. So on Netflix, you can get the English dub, the Filipino dub, and the Japanese dub, apparently. So I've watched the Filipino and English dubs just to compare. I saw a few minutes of the Japanese dub, and I have to say, the Japanese dub is like one of the better ones. Because, well, I guess because it's an anime, so hearing it in Japanese really works really well, which is weird to say because I'm the Filipino. But I couldn't really... There are a lot of things that I didn't like about the Filipino dub, but I still would watch it with that, with those voices and that audio more than the English dub, because when it made me cringe to just listen to the English dub. Honestly,
yeah. Sometimes the English dubs are really like they're jarring,
really bad. They're jarring, and I mean Shay Mitchell, who does the voice of Alexander Dresse in the English dub, is pretty good, but what. There are a few things that were annoying about I'll just go into the whole thing about the different sounds, because for one thing, I don't know why they have to do exaggerated like Filipino accented English when it's the side characters talking, because Shay Mitchell just speaks like normally. And then with the others, all of us speak that way. So they just made all the side characters. It's pretty racist, honestly. It's like, you know, characters speaking with a stereotypical accent and making us sound like we don't speak English that well, which is annoying. And I guess I said, now I know how it feels when you hear, well, when other nationalities complain about being like, why would you have them have an exaggerated like Chinese accent, right, or Japanese accent, or even a like Hispanic accent? Like, why do that? And I said, that's what they did with this English dub of Dresse, which is annoying. Also, though, so there's that, the way they speak English. And then when they have to say lines in Filipino, like the incantations or even the actual terms, the names of the mythological creatures, they don't even pronounce it right. So I said, pick a lane. Like, we don't speak English right, but then when you try to speak Filipino, it sounds bad too. Like, just, it's weird. Especially, I don't know how fluent the actresses are in Filipino, but like, the incantation sounds so bad because they're in Filipino still, and they just have subtitles.
Yeah,
it's so bad. It's like, I think like cringe.
It would make sense if it was like the accent was just the natural accent, and then thus when you speak it, you know, Tagalog or Filipino or whatever it is, the language, then it's gonna sound natural as well. But clearly that's not the case.
So yeah, it was pretty inconsistent, and in the English dub. So I switched, and I was like, okay, I'm getting annoyed and getting distracted from like a pretty solid story. And the Filipino dub was pretty weird too. Well, for at least it sounded more natural in Tagalog. So, okay. But there were some translations that were weird also. And there was this whole controversy about the actress they cast to do the voice acting for Alexandra Dresse, Liza Soberano. And I guess I just have to address this because it's a whole thing. So she's a Filipino-American actress. She's pretty popular, but she spent most of her life in the US. So her English is probably perfect. I said, you should have gotten her to just do the English dub, to be honest. But she's not very fluent in Filipino. And she had to actually learn, and you could hear that she made the effort. She's been in a lot of like our local telenovelas. But she usually plays like a rich character who speaks English. So whenever you hear her speak Tagalog, it's awkward, to say the least. So I found it strange that they probably thought that they would cast her for like the star power or appeal to boost the popularity of the show. And in a way it backfired, because the moment they released the dub, I felt bad for her. Everyone was just bashing her Tagalog accent and how like monotonous it sounds, like unemotional. I said, yeah, because she's just making so much effort to try and sound natural. But it won't ever sound natural if it isn't. So that's just the way it is. And if I said that in the English dub, some of the Tagalog lines were awkward, they were awkward for her like the whole time, because she was speaking the whole part in Tagalog, and it was weird. And I feel bad for her. She got a lot of backlash because of that. And
Yeah, it's a production issue. That's not on her. Like,
yeah.
This is, I have this thing against celebrity voice casting. Just
yeah.
If my echo is back, but anyway, but if the celebrity, the big actors are not good at voice acting, don't cast them. I mean, I think we're lucky with what Netflix did. You know, it's hit or miss. But what Netflix did, for example, with Castlevania, was good because Richard Armitage and, oh my gosh, I forgot his name, the guy who does the voice of Alucard, are both really good at voice acting.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either, but I know who you mean. Theo James.
No, Theo James is the other guy. Oh. It was, I forget. He's the one, he was on Battlestar Galactica, so.
Oh, wait, Edward James Olmos? No, I'm just gonna, let's just, I'm just a man.
James Callis. James Callis.
Oh, okay, oh yeah, I know him.
So yeah, he's good. So they were both good, and like the voice cast of Castlevania in general was good. So I said that works. Even like, what's her name? The voice cast of She-Ra was pretty good as well. Some of them were famous, some of them were not. So it's just weird. So the Tagalog dub was still more acceptable to me to listen to than the English dub, but. At this point, like, strangely enough, the best sounding to me was the Japanese dub. Again, because it's an anime. But the production values are pretty good. The animation is great. I think they were able to just pick out really interesting stories to include for a first season while leaving enough room for more interesting threads to be pursued. And I hope the series gets renewed because I'm really still pretty proud of it. It looks great. It can go up there with the other like darker, edgier anime series on Netflix, and I hope like it at least introduces people to Filipino culture and I'm a big fan of Filipino mythology as well. So I just really hope it gets renewed and more people watch it. It's not a very long series anyway, so I'll advocate watching it. The dub thing is funny, but at the end of the day, there are subtitles, and if you don't speak Filipino, it won't really bother you. It just bothers us, but for the rest of it, it's like, just don't watch the English dub. I'd say just watch it in the original language and learn a few things. I mean, I noticed too for the English dub, they would cast like every like famous Filipino American actor, like Dante Basco had a guest role there, and Manny Jacinto had a guest role. He was pretty good though. He was pretty good, to be fair. And yeah, so it was funny. It's like, oh, every film actor who is like currently popular has a guest role on this, a guest voice role on this show. But I guess, you know, we're all trying to be proud of it. And the source material is pretty good. So I hope more people watch Trece. And I hope Trece gets renewed. And I don't know if they can recast the voice actors, but at this point, as long as they renew it. I would say something about the animation, though, that was a bit weird. And I guess it's a budget issue because, of course, they didn't have as much money to do Trece as they did on Castlevania. But when it's the mythological creatures, the animation is really like intricate and detailed and sharp. And then when it's the human side characters, it's like, they're obviously doodles, like drow. They practically have like, okay, they don't really have distinguishing characteristics because they're in the background. I think you just paid the animators to animate the mythological creatures and maybe some main characters, but like the character design for the humans is just kind of sad. It's okay. It's just, you know, doodle some humans in the background there. But
why
that's
does
it.
That remind me of, if we go all the way back to Death Note, I don't know if you remember the second half of Death Note. We just started being like, we're just going to show the same still image while dialogue happens in the background because we don't have any money.
Something like that. It's so funny. It's like, okay, I get it. We have a budget and yeah, okay. But it's hilarious. Other than that, yeah. The action sequence are pretty good. And I think there's a fun story there for people who just like supernatural crime horror story, so
good.
It's up there. Watch Trece.
I do have something to check it out. It's going to be a little while, but I do. You've made me want to try, and then I will see if it upsets me or not.
Yeah, it gets dark, and there's some gore there, Angela, sorry. So, I mean...
I can handle anime gore a little better than I can handle, like, live-action stuff, so...
Right. Okay. I mean, I recommend it to anyone. And I'm just really super proud of it. I said so much stuff about the dubs, but... It's because, you know, I was so excited to see, like, oh, Filipino representation for once. And it's weird and it's funny. But I said, this is all we're going to get for now. So I'm going to take it. And it's not
right.
That's why representation matters, honestly.
It's true.
So there.
Well, that was a good advertisement for Trece. I look forward to watching it. Now we move on to China, I think. So, Angela, you had some Chinese dramas that you were going to share with us.
I watched both Word of Honor and Sleuth of the Ming Dynasty.
Okay.
And Word of Honor is the most recent one. I only finished a couple months ago, I think. And it's on Netflix now, and it's, you know, two dudes having adventures.
We do love two dudes having adventures.
Well, last time we did an Asian Drama Corner, I think I talked about Legend of Fae, and plot-wise, it's very similar to Legend of Fae, and it's written by the same, like, webcomic writer, or not webcomic, web novel writer. So I'm like, you really wrote the same story twice, didn't you?
It worked out, right?
Plot-wise, they're incredibly similar. But actually, what I like about it, though, is that, like, the main characters are actually outside of the drama for half of the time. They're like kind of like circling it for like reasons, but most of the time they're just like watching all the clans like bicker secretly. Well, not at all, right. You know what I mean, like hanging out doing their thing. But what I liked of the two, I liked Sleuth of the Ming Dynasty a lot more. Mm-hmm. Because I think it just has a better rounded world overall. Right. Like, Word of Honor, like, I mean, and to be fair, I have heard that in this genre, like, everybody's supposed to just die all the time. So the fact that everybody but the leads dies is, like, in fact, atypical, because the leads should be dead too.
Oh! It was a step up.
So I appreciate that on the one hand, but then you just get tired of all the women being dead. It's just annoying. Yeah. So like Sleuth of the Ming Dynasty too, it invests more into its characters as a whole. And so even though there is a fridging, like, and I'm mad about the fridging and I'm mad about whether or not it was like truly necessary and yada, yada, like I'm not as mad as I would be because it's the only one.
Makes sense.
and there are so many other female characters that do a lot, and like, and just the world and the story overall seem to actually like have time and thought to put into them.
Right.
It's also food as a metaphor for love, the show. So I'm a big fan of that.
Okay.
It's like my jam. And it's shot really, Sleuth of the Ming Dynasty is on Viki. And I just, yeah, just the writing overall is really strong. Like, one of my favorite things is that one of the two leads has PTSD, and that's an important character trait for him, just, like, period. Like, they do things just for him solo as a character with that, and things with the plot for him as a character with that, and character development with that. But they also use it to skirt the censorship really cleverly.
Oh, okay.
And I love that they can do it all. Like, it's just really strong writing, because what they basically do is establish that because he frequently has dreams, like flashback dreams,
right?
You know, and they get worse and everything, and then they establish that he begins to see, you know, the other lead in those flashback dreams as like one of the fellow soldiers that died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then when IRL, not in the dreams, he, you know, runs sobbing across what looks like a battlefield, and that character is there, like, they can get away with that because they're just like, oh, it's just his PTSD. Like, he just been flashing back. It was one of his brothers in arms. And then they use the food as a metaphor for love. It's important in the show and even tied into the PTSD. Right. And it's part of the whole family. Like, it is a found family story as well. Mm. It's, which you can do when you let other characters live.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they also use that as a metaphor to hide behind, which I like a lot. They're always expressing their concern and worry for each other in terms of food. Like,
okay.
You know, he's been missing. I hope he's not hungry. Like, I hope that he's eating. Or, right. Like, you can't die. I don't know how to cook. How am I going to feed myself? Being like, you have to get up. You have to wake up. It's time to go home for dinner. Like, that kind of thing. Like, so I think it's just really smartly done. And one reason, there's two main reasons I think it's not as talked about. One is that just the timing with it premiering was in 2020 when there was a lot more lockdown in China as well.
Right.
So they weren't able to promote it as much, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, compared to Untamed and Word of Honor, like, there's, like, very little either promotional content or behind-the-scenes content that you can find.
Right.
The most that I found was, like, a series of, there's, like, 8-10-minute videos there where they were clearly filming from their homes. Well, one of them was still filming there. Somehow he's, like, still filming a character even though the rest of them were back home. I guess he had pickups or something to do. He's the lead. So he was in the hotel room in costume, but the rest of them were at home eating. Like, they were even doing like a mukbang thing. They're like, this is the show. But I was surprised at how frank the actors were allowed to discuss it. And I was like, is this because they're at home?
Right, like, there's no one there
here to yell at them. The leads are Taiwanese. So maybe, I mean, they mostly seem to work. They mostly seem to work in China, but I wonder if they're just like, feel like they have
to me? Yeah.
But even the production though appears to be asking very like leading questions, which is very surprising to me. We compare it with I've not seen as much promo for Word of Honor. I know it's out there and I've been told that they are surprisingly frank as well, but like on tape they would get asked stupid questions about love interests and it's just
I remember that and I was like, are y'all obtuse?
Like, there's plenty of other things you could be asking them about. But this, like, whoever is doing these videos, I don't know, but there's very little, and I think they couldn't promo it because they couldn't film stuff. And then the other reason is, I actually think about Queen and Hyun's Man with this, where it was, like, the story and the plot fell apart, but they put all of the eggs in the romance basket.
Right.
So as long as there's a happy ending, you don't really care about the rest, because that is where they, like, concentrated the majority of their effort. And that's what it feels like with Untamed and Word of Honor, where they concentrated the majority of their effort and writing to make you care just about that.
Right.
And so it's not that I didn't adore the two leads and Sleuth together, because I do, but I'm not, I don't think people get quite as feral about them because the like quality is spread throughout the entire story and production and characters.
Yeah.
So I want to like get way more people to watch Sleuth because I think it's really good and underappreciated. And produced by Jackie Chan, apparently. So
there. Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So it looks beautiful. It's beautifully shot. And I was like, it's Jackie Chan money, I guess. I don't know. So it's really good. I highly recommend that. Those are the two Chinese dramas that I have seen within the past few months.
Well, I have seen two Chinese dramas in the past few months. And I am echoing. and I feel like they're very similar to each other. It seems like every time I watch a modern Chinese drama, it is just love O2O again. So that's good to know for me. But I watched Love Scenery.
Mm-hmm.
And You Are My Glory. So Love Scenery was actually quite cute. I don't know if you've heard of it or know about it, slash I can't tell you anything about the actress in it. But it's basically essentially the same in that this girl starts playing this game and then a guy is helping her in the game, right? He doesn't know who she is in real life, so he has a crush on her in the game. And then he also has a crush on her in real life. And then he's like, that's so crazy that I like both of these girls, like, but they're the same girl.
That's your jam. That's the love interest, love triangle with yourself. That's your thing.
That is my thing. And I love it. So, in fact, I actually have not finished it because once they like met in real life and they knew who each other were and started dating, I was like, it's not the same anymore. Even though they have very cute chemistry. It's definitely a very cute show. I'm definitely going to finish it. I'm not like mad at it or anything. But I was just like, I just want to go back to that other part. So, yeah. Anyway, very cute. And also it's like a little bit of like, you know, Chinese entertainment scene because she's an actor. She's a famous actress slash singer. I'm not even really sure what her like primary role is, but she's a celebrity in China. And so he has a crush on her as like a celebrity, right? He likes, you know, her songs, he watches her movies, whatever. So then it's like, oh, I should get over this celebrity and maybe date this girl that I'm playing the game with. But it's actually a celebrity. Oh my God. Hello. Aww. So anyway. Oh, wow. Yeah. So that part was really cute. But anyway, that's all. There's like nothing else is going on except that the second male lead for that drama, let me go look up, you know, these people's names. So I'm not just like this dude and that dude and also this dude. The second male lead is like 50, like literally he is 50 and he is her like mentor kind of. He's a fellow actor. The actor is Hu Bing. But in the drama, he's playing like a senior actor of hers who has a crush on her. He's also her friend. And I really hate it because I'm like, hello, this is like, this would be sexual harassment if you did anything. And since you're not doing anything, because it would be sexual harassment if you did, why is this here? This is such an unnecessary part of the story. It's just there for him to be jealous of the younger guy. And then that's it. He's just sad. And I don't care that he's sad because I don't care about this man. And he should find someone his own age. But the main roles are Lulu Zhu and Lin Yi. I don't know if you know these people, but those are the main people in it. And very cute. I enjoyed it. I will continue it eventually. But in the meantime, I went over to You Are My Glory because everyone was talking about it. It was like the most hyped thing around because Jill Reba and Yang Yang are the leads. I've only seen Yang Yang in Love 020, but everyone loves him. Jill Reba, I've always seen people talk about her, I think because of the long ballad. Mm-hmm. But I have never seen her in anything. So this was my first time watching them. They have great chemistry also, and she's super cute. I'm like, I don't know if she's like a good actress because so far there's like her character is like a person who wants to learn this game and is also an actress. And the reason that she's learning the game is because she has a sponsorship deal with the game and she can't play it. And they want her to do a tournament playing it to prove that she can, you know? So she has to learn the game. But unfortunately, there is no love triangle with yourself because from the start, he knows her. I was so mad about this. This was like such a wasted opportunity. Basically, it did last. It was like for like two episodes. Okay. She gets on the game. She gets him to help her. And then she realizes, she finds out that he's a guy she had a crush on back in school. So she immediately is like, I have to get him to come help me learn this game, like, in person so that he will fall in love with me again, basically. Or not again. He never loved her. So, to fall in love with me, period. So there's, like, a hilarious sequence of her being like, oh, my God, like, my, this application that I bought from your company doesn't work, so you have to come fix it. No one else can fix it. Only you can fix it. So that he would come and see her and be like, oh, my God, it's you, right? Girl that used to like me in school that also is now famous. And then they did that, and now they're just learning the game together in person. And I was like, why? This could have been so much more fun if you had worked around this instead of making them know each other immediately. But it's okay. It's still very cute, even though I think I'm like 8 episodes in and nothing happens other than them flirting and playing this game together. That is the whole show. So I don't know.
Sometimes I'm fine with that.
Right. Sometimes you're like, hey, cool. I just like chill, you know, there's no stress. You're just like, let me enjoy this. There was one time that like he had to go meet some school friends and they were making fun of him. I think his deal, Yang Yang's deal, is that he left, like he was learning one thing in school and then he gave up on it to go be a robotics engineer. This is like somehow disgraceful. And I'm like, I think it's pretty cool that you were a robotics engineer. But now he's like, I don't know if I like robotics anymore. Maybe I should go back to the earlier thing. Double disgrace. Like, this is really ridiculous that this is a struggle. But anyway, so he was struggling with that at some dinner with his school friends. So she sent him like a free, like some expensive champagne for everyone and like comped their meals or something so that his friends would see that like super famous girl who's very sexy is paying for his things. And so then his friends were like, oh, dang, we should make fun of you for robotics. Like, okay, I guess that worked out. So that was like the most stressful thing that happened in all 8 episodes that I have watched so far. But that's okay. So if you want a super, you know, low key time, you should watch You Are My Glory. And that's what I have to say about Chinese dramas.
I mean, that is a super low key time is often what I want. So maybe I'll check it out.
Yes. I just don't know why. Like, it's because I don't check what the drama's about before I go in. I'm just like, people are talking about this. I want to watch this. So somehow every time that I'm like, I'm going to watch this, it turns out that it is Love O2O, but new. Love O2O, but different. So there you go. So do we have any K-dramas to speak of?
Well, I guess I have one. Oh, and then I have the Thai Let's Fight Ghost. Were we doing that last?
Oh, wait, let's do Thai first, since there's only
one. Okay, so the Thai Let's Fight Ghost, I watched. Disclaimer, I have not seen the Korean Let's Fight Ghost. I don't know why I'm like this, but here we are. So the Thai Let's Fight Ghost, it's okay, it's decent. It's like, I would give it like a 5 out of 10. It took about 5 episodes to get me emotionally invested in the characters. Like, when they would interact, they were really cute. Like, I'm a big fan of they meet and she kicks his ass. Like, I'm a fan of that. And then, but it just, like, to give them any backstory, they would hint at it, but they weren't giving me anything to hear about. And I really did not care for their, like, the goofy friends. They were not, like, they were in this version, they were, like, ghost hunters who couldn't see ghosts, and they like clue into what's going on with him, and they would follow him around, and I don't know, it wasn't funny to me. Like, there was nothing wrong, it just didn't work for me. And then in the middle, it was like really, really, really good. I just like the dynamic that they had, just like, you know, fighting ghosts and everything together, and they made me care about them, and they were really cute. And then the end, the plot was just like so wild. There was like a literal like demon there, like the evil guy, the like bad ghost, possessed by a bat, like the human, but he was a ghost, or he was possessed by a demon or something. Like, they literally ended up putting him in like devil makeup, like red demon makeup, and he was like shirtless, so it's like down to his like waist, and he has like horns, and they're like in there's like a pit to like hell or something. I was just like, what is happening right now? So the end was really weird. But if you like Let's Fight Ghost. And you're curious, was it like that in the K-drama? Was that how the K-drama ended?
I don't remember how the K-drama ended, but I don't remember it being weird. So I feel like, at the same time, though, my friend who watched it, she's seen both. She loves the K-drama, and then she recently watched the Thai drama, too. She wasn't upset about it. So maybe it was kind of like, just weird, but not bad. I don't know.
Because I just wasn't expecting this man to suddenly, like, be in red demon makeup with his like whole six pack and everything.
That's
still
true. That's true.
I was just like, what?
So that might have happened and I just don't remember, but I just feel like the way that they did it in the K-drama is just more, you know, yes,
they
I'm a demon.
It's more subtle about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm picturing that it was probably very similar to how Oh My Ghost was with that character.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Like, it was probably like that in the Thai drama. They just decided to make some costuming choices or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I feel like, you know, and then I don't remember like precisely how. I think it just, she like went away for school very briefly and then came back. I was like, this is very drama. Yeah,
as they do.
But it like literally made no sense. Her mom was like, you must go away for school. Scene one, scene two, she's back. And I'm like, why does this even happen? I was like, but this is probably inherited from the K-drama because they always do that.
Right. So. And there's like never justification for it. Like, was that necessary?
No.
Is it helpful? Is it kind? No.
So if you like the Let's Fight Ghost story, it's probably pretty, faithful.
Yeah.
Or if you just like the concept of like Let's Fight Ghost, where it's like a college student dude who can see ghosts and he makes money by like fighting them, just like getting rid of them, and then he encounters like a ghost who he ends up first trying to exorcise, and then she goes around and does it with him, and then they fall in love, and then other things happen. If that story appeals to you, the Thai drama is a probably good version of it. But like I said, it took me a while to like feel emotionally invested in the characters.
Understandable, understandable.
But I've seen the lead in other Thai dramas, so it was fun to see him play. He has range, like, to see him play
very good.
And continue to, like, grow and get more leading roles and stuff, because he had a really bad time on the production of the first drama I saw him at.
So
it's a drama we're not going to get into right now. We're just not going to go there. But just a bit of time, like.
Well, I'm glad that, you know, things are working out for him then, and it's always nice to discover that actors have range.
Yeah. So it was good. It was, and she was very, very good too. I was like looking up if she was in anything else that I would watch, but
yeah,
I don't think so, because I liked her a lot. Well, so that's good. The Thai Let's Fight Ghost.
Good to know. Good to know. So now we can move on to Korean dramas, if any. I have one that recently ended that I quite enjoyed. If you are of the type to like coming of age college tales, I thought that At a Distance, Spring is Green was quite good and enjoyable. However, I call it At a Distance, Spring is a BL, because despite the fact that Mina, who I love from Kang Mina from True Beauty, she's like a side character in True Beauty, but she got her first leading role after True Beauty with At a Distance, Spring is Green. And I was so proud. I was so excited for her. I was so ready to watch this, but she may as well not be. Like, she's the female lead, but the story is really about the two dudes who are like super into each other, but super not. And it is not a love triangle. Like, at first I thought it was gonna be a love triangle where they hate each other because they're both into her, but no. It's like Park Ji-hoon, who was in 101. He's the male lead. And he's like a super bubbly, bright kid that everyone likes. He's super popular. He's super rich. But secretly, he is sad. And then there is Bae In-hyuk, who is playing the super sad boy, you know, Sundara poor guy. And Park Ji-hoon really wants to be Bae In-juk's friend. I don't know why. He just really needs it. He's like, you have to like me. Because he's wealthy. Everything easy. So it's literally just about learning to like each other. And eventually, at some point, Park Ji-hoon starts dating Kang Mina. And that's her relationship with this story.
But it was really good. I liked how they liked how
the like abuse storyline, because Park Ji-hoon's father is abusive, and then it's like how that affects his family, and of course his own psyche, and how that turns out with them was really interesting. And also Bae In-hyuk, you know, having to work and study at the same time, and like not knowing how to have a good time or enjoy himself, right? Because he's always looking out for his family. Learning to accept help. He's like his arc. Kang Mina's character, she has like some sort of anxiety, public social anxiety. She has social anxiety. It's not totally clear why she has it. We just know she has problems with her mom. She like meets her mom one time later on, and then she like kind of stops being so anxious. But it's barely anything. She barely gets anything. It's so sad. Anyway, if you don't mind the inherent misogyny, it's very good. There's also like a bunch of side characters who are, you know, sweet, funny, whatever, or horrible, but get their comeuppance to some degree. So that one was very nice.
I wanted to ask if you'd watch Doom at Your Service.
I did watch Doom at Your Service. I don't know what to do with Park Bo-young. I love her so much.
Oh, no.
I mean, it was, you know what? Abyss was garbage.
Yeah.
But Doom at Your Service was not garbage. It just had the potential to be so much more.
One of those. I mean, that's most key dramas, I feel like. There's only a few that are, like, at the top of the pack, you know?
That's true. It should have been a movie. Because, like, you know the premise, right?
Yeah.
Which is like a super interesting, like, fun idea.
Yeah.
But they kind of just like immediately jumped into okay, the resolution is you have to fall in love with you, and then you'll die. Right? And that'll resolve everything. And then they didn't even make that fun. They just, she now loves him, like, for real.
That's just sad. For the rest of the time, like, what are we going to do? Who's going to die?
I don't want to be sad.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some K-dramas where sometimes I'm just like, I didn't buy them being in love, but then once they were in love, I could, like, just watch that and get into it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they have a lot of, I think they have a lot of chemistry.
Yeah.
And I totally bought their love. I just didn't understand why the story didn't take longer to get there, because I was like, you have 16 episodes. You need a whole story. You just skipped the last five chapters.
Yeah, why rush? You have plenty of time. That's the point of you. Like,
Yeah. And then on my timeline, everyone was into the secondary love triangle, but I was not at all. Like, I did not understand the point of that story thematically, what it had to do with the mains. But yeah, so it's just basically like best friend of Park Bo Young. Had a guy that ditched her in college, and she's not over him yet. Meanwhile, best friend slash roommate of guy who ditched her in college is now into her. And it turns out that all along he's been into her, and like he sort of helps break them up. But it's okay because he loves her. So then they end up together. And I was like, I guess.
Don't support this.
But anyway, so yeah, I do not recommend Doom at Your Service.
Sad, but I'm going through my queue really slowly anyway, so that's all right.
I was gonna ask, but this is a pretty old one. But it's gonna be aired in Filipino dubs soon. Has either of you watched Two Cops? Is that any good?
That doesn't look like a romance, so I haven't seen it.
I have not seen it, so I cannot actually speak to it. But I will say I've not heard good things about it.
Oh no! Why is it coming here then? Why did they pick that one?
Probably because it's one of Kim Son Ho's few leading roles, and he got really popular after Startup.
Yeah.
The premise seems pretty interesting, and I've only seen like teasers and trailers.
Yeah,
but it hasn't started yet. So
I think if you enjoy the bromance aspect, the bromance is supposed to be good and fun. It's just poor Harry. That's not cutting it.
Had another leading role that was better than Two Cops. But is he the lead in Two Cops? I thought Jo Jung-suk was the lead in Two Cops.
Yeah, he's the second male lead. But it's a situation where they're like sharing a body or something. So
yeah, that's right. So he's a pretty big character. Catch the Ghost that he was in. That was a better one. That's the one that they should have imported to you. he's the actual lead in that one. But the movie I first saw him in, or the show, I forget, with Go Kyung Po, where he's the second male lead in that. That one was
Strongest
really
Delivery good. Man.
Yes, that is a better drama too. Those are the whoever imports these to the Philippines. These are the ones that you should do. Listen to us.
I don't know what their vetting process is at this point. And because I don't follow K-dramas that much, I switch on the TV and I see, they've dubbed a new K-drama. Is this any good? I don't know.
I feel like they'll end up doing all of them because it reminds me of, my son Chaono, right? He got super popular in Japan because of My Idea is Gangnam Beauty on Netflix. And now they literally air everything he's in. It does not matter how much he's in it or how bad it is. They will dub it into Japanese and air it on Japanese television.
That's funny.
Well, I guess it's just cheaper for them to pay for the rights to a K-drama, dub it, spend a few weeks dubbing it. Given that we are in lockdown and it's very tricky to create new content, that's what we're going for. I guess it's still okay. I still prefer that they dub K-dramas over dubbing Hollywood movies in Filipino. It's one, unnecessary, because everyone speaks English anyway, and two, really just weird. It's just weird.
Understandable. All right. Any others?
I saw Mad for You, or Mad for Each Other. Might be Mad for Each Other. I watched that this week. It was good. I really enjoyed it for most of it. It's like a good enemies to lovers. They just like encounter each other at because they live in the same neighborhood. Or actually, it turns out they are neighbors, and she just moved in to the apartment next to his recently. But that's not, they don't meet because they're neighbors. They meet because they're in the same neighborhood. So they meet out and about. But they go to the same psychiatrist, and so they, part of the reason why they're enemies at the beginning is because due to each of their individual issues, they really like set each other off really well. Or poorly, I guess, would be the way to put it. But my favorite moment of their rivalry is when when they realize they live next to each other, and they start bickering via like naming their Wi-Fi. And then other residents of the apartment building start like chiming in on it via the Wi-Fi names. So that was really fun. I remember I was watching the like last episode or second to last episode, and I was messaging my friend, and I was like, this K-drama is so great because like it's time for the late hour drama, and they're like doing it from good sources. So because he has to like go back to work. He was a police officer, and he was briefly suspended, and he's allowed to go back to work now. But they were used to like she could just dominate his time and attention, right? Like after they get together. Because he wasn't doing anything, but now he's like a workaholic and he's back at work. And I was like, this is a really good, like, well to draw conflict from. It makes sense for the characters. They did that for all of like 2 seconds, and then they just immediately went into like ridiculous over the top unnecessary drama. And I was really upset about it. And so it even ended with a study abroad she goes abroad at the last minute.
Of course she does.
So at the time she had wanted to go abroad because she's like paranoid for good reasons, but now it is like a mental health thing that she suffers from, and it was part of her wanting to escape. And then she like starts there. And so I didn't want her to like not want to go abroad anymore because she's in a relationship with him.
Right.
But
right.
You could have easily made it be, although I liked that scene in 17 again, or still 17, where she was like, I mean, this is my dream from when I was younger, or I was in different circumstances, and I don't feel that way now. And maybe a big part of that is because I want to stay with this person, but so what? Like, I liked that. So you could have done that here, but they could have very easily just made it be about the fact that she's like in a better place now, and it's not necessary to run away like that. But she just like left. I mean, she comes back. It's more before she was going to move there, and this time she just takes a vacation there instead.
Right, goes to visit.
It definitely feels like it's for unspecified time period, though. You know, that's what she's like. I'm going to leave for unspecified time period, and it's implied you don't communicate very often because he doesn't know when he's going to see her again. She leaves his dog with him, so that's that I'm going to come back. But it's still like, why do y'all act like the internet and phones don't exist? You can stay in touch. To bring this all full circle to what we were talking about at the beginning, Coffee Prince is superior. It's implied they have been in contact and visiting each other this whole time.
She just doesn't
tell him. She lies to him about staying there an extra year so she can surprise him when she comes back. She's like, she already knew. She wanted to surprise him, but because they're in contact, he already knew when she was coming back. So she had to like make up a lie to surprise him.
That's cute.
Like, well, that's what Coffee Prince is. But with this, it's just like they were kind of fighting, and then they got back together, but then she's immediately like moving out of the country. Or leaving the country. She's like, she's not moving anymore because she left the dog with him, so it's implied that she's gonna come back, but she still goes, and he doesn't know, he misses her and doesn't know when she's coming back. And I'm like, why? Why? Like, just especially because you don't need any more time. It's not even like, at least I kind of understand it when they get like a last minute new episode order, or you're not at the end of your season. But when they all cram this into a finale, it is like you could round out your finale with just like showing scenes of where everybody is now and showing scenes of them being cute together. And that would be superior to this. It's like the idea that you can't have them happy together ending has to only be the very final scene. It has to be like uncertain in the scenes before. And I don't understand why dramas think that.
Right. Like, I don't know why either.
You could continue to show other ways in which they're continuing to improve from where they were when it started. Mm-hmm. Like, so, but overall it's cute. And it is only 12, 30 minute episodes. So especially them ending the drama like this felt, they didn't need to do it. It felt like they're like, we have the rule book and we have to follow the rule book. Like, that's what it felt like.
Right.
So, but I mean, it's light and easy for the most part. Like, I don't usually go through dramas very as fast as I used to, but this one was like almost at my normal speed just because it was really simple.
Oh, nice.
But that's on Netflix. That's the most recent K-drama I've watched. I did watch, I forget the name of it now, Nobleman Ryu's Wedding.
Oh my God, I want to watch that.
That one is good. And it's really, it's very charming, and the production is very, clearly very small, and they basically have like one historical tiny house that they were able to film at, and they just like, that's their, they just do different rooms if it's supposed to be a different house, and just like different angles of the same house. But you're like, you know what? Like, you're out here doing your best. You're making a historical BL now. Like, good for you. Like, and it's with the two most adorable guys from this production company. It's with the guy from the fluffy haired one from Mr. Heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big eyed puppy dog one from You're My Star.
Okay.
So it's those two. And then the guy who is the bodyguard lead from the very, very first one, When Your Eyes Linger, he's the second male. They have a second lead now. And he's the romantic rival. It's just like the others. It's incredibly short. So, you know, they don't develop too much, but it was really, really cute. It was.
I need to check that one out.
I mean, it's like an hour, half of your time. It's like, and in fact, it is like all the other ones where they have now on Viki, they have the episode version of it and the movie version of it. They're like, if you don't feel like having to keep clicking next episode, watch it all together here. So yeah, that one was cute. I just forgot about that because I watched it a while ago and I watched it, you know, in an hour and a half. But that was good. Good for them. Make a GL now. Come on, let's go. I'm waiting. Thailand has announced a bunch of them recently.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of GLs all of a sudden. I've heard of like three, but they can't film anything right now. Who knows? And there's that Korean one that, like, according to Dramalist, is still supposed to have aired in like April, and like nothing ever happened. And there's like no, I haven't heard anything about it. So who knows? Right, but yeah, these Thai ones, like, maybe they'll happen, and people are excited, and the stories sound good, but nobody's able to film anything, so hopefully that they won't just languish forever.
Yeah.
Even once they're able to film again, hopefully that doesn't like end up canceling the production. So, where are we? I watched the Women Love Women episode of an Indian show that's on Netflix.
Feels like you mentioned that.
Yeah, I watched just that episode. I just forgot, but like, if the production is as snappy on all the other episodes as it is on that one, then they'll all be really cute. But I watched that one because that's the author of the, like, it's a similar concept where it was just like a series of unrelated stories, vignettes, basically. But she had written one like almost a year ago that had aired on YouTube. It was like 5 minute episodes. It was like five minute episodes. It was really short. Well, that same author wrote now, it's like episode 4 of Feels Like Ish. And she's very good. What she can pack is this episode is like 20, 30 minutes.
Okay.
And what she's able to accomplish in that time is her writing is just very tight. It makes you love the main character, love them both, gives them their own little individual character arcs as well as the romantic character arc. And it's very, very well done. So this one is like a coworker. Like, she's a not out Thai woman at her company, and the company hires an out. Come in, and she just like crushes on her immediately, and then it's really cute. And then she like, but then she does step back a little bit later because then like they get close, and she opens up to her, and then the other one feels like that means what she needs right now is a friend. Like, I don't want her to feel like I'm just like I. She needs my support right now. That my romantic feelings have to take a backseat for the moment. And that's, I mean, in 20 minutes, that's your conflict. Like, that's,
Yeah.
But it works out, and it's really cute. So I highly recommend it. It was really good.
That kind of reminds me of Vine. Hey, mm-hmm. Not the content, just the GL things.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Vine.
Mm-mm. Oh, no, so, yes. Yeah. I was talking about it a little bit, but
yeah,
it did not end with what we would want, I think.
No, it did not end with any particular success. Other than, I mean, I think it's like the good thing is that her family, or at least the other female lead that we would care about, knows and accepts and supports her.
It's definitely steps forward for K-drama.
Yeah.
And if it was a drama I would watch otherwise, I would be into it.
Right. Like, I didn't go into it expecting that. I didn't know anything about it. I just started watching it. And so I was, like, pleasantly surprised. The one thing that that bothered me, aside from the real life background of, like, her exes in the drama, real life husband being like, oh yeah, but this is, you know, don't worry.
I remember that.
Yeah. I was like, okay, homophobe. Thank you for sharing. You are not even involved in the production.
Yes.
But anyway. So aside from that, in the drama, my issue was that when she comes out to her husband, he's very like understanding and like supportive at first, you think, because he's been cheating on her the whole time. So like what the hell does he care? Right.
Right.
He's like, well, you're better than me because you haven't cheated on me, even if you like other people. but then he's like, however,
the bar is so low.
Yeah, exactly. The bar is so low. But then he's like, because you're not planning on divorcing me, and because we're fine, I support you, you should not come out publicly because that'll be bad for the company. You should just take over the company, become the CEO, everyone will love you, and then just do whatever you want in private. And she doesn't like fight on that, even though she doesn't necessarily agree with that. You don't see her come out publicly. So it's like suggested like he was
right.
And I was like, no.
No,
I don't like that. But you know, at least she was comfortable with herself. And no one suggested that it was bad.
So
that's a step up. And also that it's a woman and not just like a dude who gets 2 seconds of I am also gay screen time.
And then nevertheless, the drama that is not worth it for the leads at all, but look, there's one episode left. If they do this, it will be huge. Mm-hmm. Like, huge for K-drama land. Like, because is this a Netflix only drama or is this airing on a network somewhere?
It's airing on JTBC.
That's huge for K-dramas. Yeah. Yeah.
And they have no reason not to. Because they have literally like the lowest possible ratings. It's not like they can get worse. So, let's do it.
I mean, The Lover was on JTBC and that was a number of years ago. And that they made it clear enough. I mean, compared to how like racy the drama was for the het couples, I mean, the censorship or the need to have the censorship was obvious enough. But it was still clear that they were choosing each other in that way. So, I mean, my friend sent me like a gift set of the scene for the most recent episode. I feel like I'm paying attention really closely to this without actually watching it yet. I'm like the person who is like rooting for this couple without watching this show, but like it's because of what it means for K-drama land overall. But I'm just like, you know what, there's a part of me that wants them just to leave it here, like, just this is good, let's quit while we're ahead. I'm almost afraid.
Right Like, don't make it worse.
But they've got like 2 seconds of screen time an episode, so. And my friend was like, every other couple but the main couple's probably settled, so she's like, I feel like the finale is going to be the mess of the main couple and then everybody else will just hopefully be ignored.
Right.
See them briefly, but that will be it. And I was like, okay, you can do it, let's go, come on, nevertheless, redeem yourself in one way.
Right. Nevertheless, is so bad, man. Aside from that, they are the only reason to watch.
There's super cuts out already, so that's what I'm going to be watching after it's done, if at all. If they stick the landing with them.
It's all we need. It's all we need.
Yep. Come on, okay, dramas. Come on. Come on, you can do it. I mean, Life is Beautiful was 2010, right? And I know that she could do it because she was so famous, but it's sometimes it's like you had this huge revolutionary thing and then so little since then, and actively, you know, still a lot of homophobic stuff. Like, I heard my friend was telling me about the plot line in Vincenzo. And there was that drama that I tried to watch last year, Sweet Munchies, that like the premise, it felt like somebody trying, somebody who like thinks they're going to talk about, you know, LGBT stuff, but isn't, doesn't do any research and then just does it terribly. Where it was just, I watched like one episode and it was basically like she works for, she has to pitch a variety show. She works for it. She's to pitch a variety show, and she decides she's going to pitch a variety show where, like, the chef is gay. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be, like, to humanize or whatever. Like, I don't know. Because she thinks, because she goes to this, like, late night cafe, and she thinks the owner is gay for whatever reason. Right. And so she, like, wants to make it about him. Long story short, he's not. It's kind of like Personal Taste, the Lee Min-ho drama from, like, 2010, 2011, where he lies because he needs to. And though, needs in Personal Taste's case was a weaker premise. With this, it's like money. It comes down to the money again, right? Like he needs it.
Right.
But then apparently he has like the drama has a bromance with him, with an actual gay chef, like within the world of this story. He ends up, but apparently it gets really like preachy about it. Like he ends up telling like the not gay guy, is it like telling the gay chef how to deal with it and stuff? Like it just, and of course he's not, and of course they date and everything. And I was like, not anymore. Not in the years where our eyes linger, Sweet Munchie. This is not.
Oh, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. You know, but anyway, come on, nevertheless, let's go. We're rooting for you. Probably the only viewers they have left are people like waiting to see if they'll do it. But that's it. I think that's K-Drama Land.
Yeah, I think we've made it through.
Congratulations.
Yay. Oh, the one last thing I'll say is everyone should watch Be My Dream Family.
Okay.
It's super cute. It's one of those like long ass, I mean, it's not really long. Each episode is like 23 minutes maybe. But it's the 120 episode dramas.
Okay.
Family drama. It's just fun. It's just sweet. It's just like you know, a bunch of family issues, but everyone loves each other. And that's it. That's all I have to say about it. There's so many, there's like, you know, many generations going on at the same time. And it's always leaves me smiling. So there you go.
Wow. We need something like that for this time. So
exactly. Yeah. So with that, I think that we can run away from the pain. Thank you all for listening.
Sorry to get us unmuted.
Yeah. Hopefully I will edit out the echoes and we'll see what happens.
Sorry about the echoes. I don't know what's happening.
We will save it. Thank you.
Thank you. Stay safe.
Yes. Check out With an Accent, news, reviews, interviews, podcasts on Twitter, obviously, Facebook, Instagram, withanaccent.com, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Bye. Bye.